Today's program was brought to you by craftbeer.com, dedicated to small and independent U.S. craft brewers. For more information, visit craftbeer.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, this is Linda Liu from Feast Meets West. Today, you'll be hearing a pre-recorded episode. We'll be talking to Esther Choi of Mock Bar about kimchi. Enjoy!
You are listening to Feast Meets West, the show where we tell the story behind your favorite Asian dishes. I'm Iris Van Kerkhove.
Hi, and I'm Linda Liu.
So every episode we talk about an Asian dish's origin, how it traveled to the West and other parts of the world, as well as the different perceptions and cultural significance of the dish in the East and the West. We're super excited to be recording this episode today from inside Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn with Heritage Radio Network. This is also our very first live episode, so hopefully it won't be a disaster. But how could it possibly be a disaster when we're interviewing Chef Esther Choi from Mock Bar and talking about what is hands down the most important food to the Korean people?
And that would be kimchi.
So, Linda, do you eat much kimchi?
You know, I've always just had it when I've gone to Korean restaurants. I love the taste of it. I think it goes really well with every food. Most recently, Iris, actually, we tried to hit up Little Dokkaebi in Greenpoint. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, right.
And it's, like, so popular now. We went on a Monday night at, like, 9 p.m., and we couldn't get in. I'm like, oh, man.
And that just makes us want to have it even more.
Exactly. Korean food is booming.
Yeah. So I love kimchi, too, and I'm really into health, so I really wanted to make it sort of like a routine in my life to have a little bit of kimchi because it's a fermented food. It's good for digestion. So I always had this, like, dream of building this kimchi habit, but it just never happens. So, like, one time at my old job, when I was working in an office, like, I try to keep a jar of kimchi in the fridge so that I would have it with every lunchtime. But then I kind of forgot about it, and I didn't, like, pack it properly. All my coworkers were like, who stunk up the fridge? Why does everything smell like kimchi? I'm like, oh, sorry. So that was the end of that dream. But, yeah, one day.
Yeah, we'll talk about how the right way to pack kimchi is.
So for those who don't know what kimchi is, it's a traditional fermented Korean side dish. It's made of vegetables with a variety of seasonings. But despite being a side dish, it's very much Korea's national dish. There's different ways it's consumed. It's usually served with other side dishes in most Korean households and restaurants. And then it's also included in recipes of other traditional dishes. But of course, it's increasingly being used outside of Korean cuisine in a more modern fusion way. And even in cocktails, the restaurant I work for in Hong Kong actually has a cocktail called the Bloody Kim. So it's like a Bloody Mary, but with pureed kimchi. So, yeah.
Yum. So why is kimchi so culturally relevant now here in the States and internationally with more and more non-Koreans eating kimchi and curious about its culinary use?
Right. So like most foods, kimchi followed the migration of the Korean people, along with the rest of Korean cuisine, of course. The largest Korean population outside of Korea is China, followed by the U.S., Korean immigration to the United States began as early as 1903, but the American community didn't grow to a significant size until the passage of the Immigration Reform Act of 1965. So now there's between 1.5 and 2 million Koreans in the U.S. now. But Korean food is really taking off in the U.S. now, decades after the largest wave of Korean immigration. And it's partially thanks to investment from the Korean government. So we were reading this article on Priceonomics.com called The Campaign to Make You Eat Kimchi. And it talks about how, I think around in 2008, the Council on Nation Branding devised a plan to promote Korea's cultural exports, like Taekwondo and K-pop overseas, and of course, Korean food. And this sort of gastro diplomacy is not just limited to Korea. Like, I think a lot of countries and their governments have been doing this.
So that was the first time I heard about this
concept. Yeah, me too. Though. But then, you know, it made sense, you know, why you're getting, like, Thai restaurants in Europe and whatnot. So they tweaked the kimchi recipes for export to also tailor to different palates, like less spicy and sourness for the U.S. market, maybe a little sweeter for Japan. Those are two main reasons, I would say, why kimchi is kind of a big deal now. And like you said, Korean food has never been more popular in New York City.
Yeah, so today we actually have an amazing American Korean chef with us. Esther Choi is the chef and owner of the popular Korean ramen bar, Mok Bar, which is located in Chelsea Market. She is also opening up a Mok Bar location in Brooklyn within the month. She is also the creator of Kimchify, which is her own Korean, which is her own kimchi brand. And also, it's a fermentation lab where she can customize kimchis for different restaurants and chefs. So welcome to the show, Esther.
Thank you. Thank you. Love all the insights you gave on kimchi. Love it. Love your detail.
Thanks. So before we dig really deep, can you just help us define what kimchi is and maybe the ingredients and how it's made?
Sure. So kimchi is traditionally Napa cabbage. That's the most popular kind. Napa cabbage being just, you know, an Asian type of cabbage, which is very different than the regular cabbage that you see. It retains a lot of water. So that's the most popular type that everyone knows. But kimchi really is any vegetable. Kimchi can be any vegetable. So kimchi is just a fermentation process that happens in a vegetable to make it a pickle. So basically, you know, just as how you would make vinegar, this is the same sort of process. So it's fermented in a certain temperature over time, and it builds up acid and becomes like a pickle. So, you know, with this process, it's just become so nutritious in, you know, vitamin C, and it's actually very similar to yogurt, which has a lot of that sort of like probiotic, you know, elements. So, you know, the health factor in kimchi is insane, let alone the taste is obviously, you know, I can't live without kimchi. I mean, when I say I eat kimchi like every day, that is a fact. And every other Korean would say the same thing.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. So clearly you have a very deep relationship with kimchi. Can you tell us a little bit about that and, you know, why you describe kimchi as the soul of your cooking?
Sure. So Korean cooking is very complex. It's complex because of fermentation. And with fermentation, there isn't an exact recipe because you can never control the environment. You can try to make it as exact as possible with temperature control and humidity control. But, you know, every vegetable is grown differently, too. The water content is different. And you just, it's like almost like an intuition. And for me, I grew up with that. I grew up with my grandma making kimchi every single year and going through that entire crazy process, which is very labor intensive. So, you know, for me, it's built into my soul because that's just what I grew up with my entire life. So in my cooking, it's definitely the star of the dish. Any kind of fermented product, it's in literally every single one of my dishes, I believe.
I was wondering, so then do Korean families usually make kimchi themselves? Or
it's a tradition, but there are many families now that do not just because of time. And, you know, as immigrants, sometimes parents are working a lot, so they just tend to buy kimchi.
Right. So, of your grandma's generation, you think that's typical?
Very typical. Oh, okay. I mean, in Korea, it was very typical. But now, it just as the new age technology in the world changing, people just stop doing these traditional things, like making kimchi with your entire neighborhood.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that kimchi is, you know, not just with Napa cabbage. Mm-hmm. So are there, like, you know, specific types? You know, how many do you make? Are there seasonal ones, or, you know, you just kimchify everything?
Sure, sure. So the reason why I came up with the term kimchify was because since I don't even know how long ago, I've just always took whatever vegetable I could find and I would make kimchi out of it, whether that be French breakfast radish, whether that be bok choy, whether that be, you know, something random like eggplant, like you would think that you could never make kimchi with it, but I have, and it tastes amazing. So kimchify just means that I can pickle and ferment any vegetable to make it taste and just use like the traditional sort of kimchi recipe for the vegetables. So, you know, yes, definitely there are seasonal kimchi types. In Korea, kimchi is obviously just not Napa. Kimchi could be anything. Mm-hmm. So, see, there are definitely seasonal, distinctive seasonal kimchis, which, like, the summer, you'll eat cucumber kimchi, while the winter, you'll eat more, like, daikon kimchi. So, at Mukbar, I do definitely put on specials as, you know, the seasons change. But, yes, we do make 9 different types all season in-house. That's daikon, regular Napa, obviously, cucumber. We do like a stewed kimchi, which is more Napa kimchi cooked with bacon. And then we do like garlic chive kimchi. There's so many different types that we do. And for me, it's like just really important that people know that kimchi just doesn't mean that it's cabbage. It could be anything.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So you talked about eating kimchi. So how much kimchi do you eat? And, you know, we actually read this fact that South Koreans consume 40 pounds of kimchi per person annually. So what's your track record?
That sounds about right. That's a lot of kimchi. Yeah. Sounds about right. Maybe in my case, it's like more like 100 pounds. But generally speaking, I eat kimchi every day. I eat it with every meal. The more kimchi, the better for me. Like, if I'm eating a slice of pizza, I'm like, oh, where's my kimchi? It's crazy. It's because I grew up like that as well. Growing up, my mom would put kimchi on pizza and give it to me. And she would put kimchi in spaghetti. And she would do all these, like, crazy things. But that's because I liked it so much, too. And kimchi is, like, has this crazy addictive flavor to it, whereas once you start eating it a lot, you just like can't stop, and everything else seems like so not as good. It's just crazy and a little weird. And we make a lot of kimchi at Mukbar, so that's the best thing about owning a Korean restaurant. You can eat kimchi all the time. You never have to buy it. It's always there. So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And just expanding on that point a little bit, eating kimchi has been so integral to Koreans, just Korean culture. Another thing we found out is that during South Korea's involvement in the Vietnam War, the government apparently requested American help to ensure that the South Korean troops could get their hands on kimchi because it was like super important for their morale. So why do you think kimchi has been and, you know, continues to be so essential in daily life and culture for Korean people? We were, like, Iris and I were talking, we were thinking, like, you know, no other food of a culture represents itself so innately, so, like, entwined in the culture of a people's than kimchi with Koreans.
I think it has a lot to do with nationalism, of like how Koreans are just super, they're super prideful people of their culture, of where they came from. And that has, I think, a lot to do with being so possessive of, you know, something like kimchi. Koreans are just, you know, they have this thing called Han, which is something that was like built in them because of, you know, all the war and all the tragedy that we went through as a country. So I think it has a lot to do with that. And when it comes to kimchi, we're just so obsessed with it. It's not even just like a regular obsession. It's like literally we are obsessed with kimchi. And it's actually a very genuine thing, too. It's like I'm telling you, I think it's just very addictive. And when you grow up with it, something so acidic and strong flavor and spicy, it just consumes your life, and nothing else is like it, you know. So you know, we hold on to that. And because of the whole health factor as well, we truly, Koreans truly believe that, you know, it makes us immune from like diseases and natural, like, you know, like that whole SARS craze. Korean mm-hmm. said that right. kimchi is the one that, you know, made them immune to SARS. I mean, which sounds crazy, but it's true.
No, does it work for Zika too?
Maybe.
Let's try it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So we are actually going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after a word from a sponsor.
Do you love craft beer? The diversity of styles and flavors? The stories of small brewery businesses and the communities behind today's craft beer movement? If so, you'll love craftbeer.com, published by the Brewers Association. Whether you tasted your first craft beer 30 years ago or just caught the bug last week, craftbeer.com is the number one destination for beer education, news, and recipes. Looking for a local brewery? Use the internet's most robust brewery finder to discover your new favorite place. Want to get geeky about your favorite beer style or find the perfect pairing for dinner? Craftbeer.com is the leading authority and can help. Celebrate the best of American beer. Visit craftbeer.com today.
Welcome back. This is Linda Liu, and you are listening to Feast Meets West. We have Esther Choi of Mock Bar here with us. So Esther, what makes good kimchi?
The secret ingredient to kimchi, I would say, is love. And I know that sounds so cheesy. I know how that sounds, but it's super true. It's so true. It requires a lot of energy and a lot of labor and a lot of thought in every single ingredient and process you go through with kimchi. And, you know, it's not easy. It takes, you know, the shortest time a kimchi could be made, I mean, besides like the quick kimchis, to actually get a fermented product of kimchi, it's at least 2 weeks. And that's speeding up the process, actually. So, you know, kimchi, it's meant to be stored for a year, and it's meant to never go bad. And that's how it was made traditionally. And, you know, kimchi was made because, you know, the Koreans wanted to go through the winter without having to harvest. I mean, Koreans were farmers and mm-hmm. et cetera. So it has this crazy history behind it. But generally, the making of the process, obviously, there's different regional types of kimchi. It's kind of like tomato sauce for, you know, Italy. It's equivalent to that. There's so many different recipes. There's so many different styles. And to make really fantastic kimchi is, you know, the secret is you got to just keep testing it. I could give you a recipe. That's not going to do anything. You know, we'll take the same recipe and I'll make it, and someone just looking at it makes it, like, could be a top chef. I'll probably end up making it better just because I have that much more experience. So, you know, because it's a fermentation process, you got to babysit it, and you have to know when it's the right time to, you know, change the temperature of the fermentation process, etc. You're not just like letting it sit on the table for until it's completely fermented. You know, you have to put it in different temperatures, and you have to know the entire process of when it's right and when it's wrong. And, you know, it just takes a lot of studying and testing and, yeah, and all of that. So mm-hmm. it's funny. In Korea, there used to be a saying, it's like every year you make kimchi, and that year, if the kimchi turns out really great, that means you'll have like a very prosperous year. And it all was dependent on how your kimchi turned out that year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a very hilarious thing, but it's true. That's what they really believed in.
Do you believe that?
Maybe a little bit.
So, you know, with all this fermentation, you touched on also a lot of the health benefits that you get from it. But is there, you know, any negative thing about kimchi? Is there such a thing as eating too much kimchi? Like, what do you have to watch out for, if anything?
I don't think so. I really don't believe so. I've eaten way too much kimchi many times. The only thing is, yes, you will end up on the toilet maybe a little bit longer than you wish. But generally speaking, it's such a health. It's like kind of like, okay, so is there such thing as eating like too much yogurt? Because it's the same essential thing, like of eating like too much probiotic. Mm. You're going to be on the toilet, you know, just because it's a whole like process of like clearing out and et cetera. So
this is funny because I had a conversation with a friend last week and then he literally said, I ate too much kimchi. I'm having kimchi poops.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, I'm like, so you're cleaning out your intestines? Cool.
Exactly. I mean, it's cabbage in the end. You eat too much raw cabbage, you'll end up on the toilet too. It's the same thing. So yeah, that if you to answer your question, no, there's nothing wrong with eating too much kimchi.
What about, because I know we were saying like it is salty. So what about the sodium aspect? Do we have to watch out for that?
I mean, with anything, yes, it is a salty product. But, you know, when you're eating kimchi, you're not just eating kimchi by itself. That's kind of weird to eat like a whole bowl of kimchi. You're eating it with like rice or you're eating it with, you know, some sort of either protein or, you know, bread or whatever you're eating it with to balance that salt. So to answer your question, if you're just eating kimchi by itself, yes, that's a lot of salt you're consuming. Make sure you drink a lot of water. But generally speaking, people don't eat kimchi that way. You know, you're eating it with rice, which balances it out.
But I feel like I've only heard non-Koreans say that's a problem, like worried about the sodium level of kimchi. But I mean, this is a topic we're not going to get into. But I feel like, you know, why are people worried about the sodium level of a traditional natural food and not all the processed food you're eating? You know, maybe
all
that's
the
problem.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, we can, you know, give some advice to listeners who've never tried kimchi and who want to get into it. Esther, do you have any like good suggestions on how to start getting into kimchi?
Well, you know, for me, I would say just go dive into it. Like, as in, go eat it at your, you know, local Korean restaurant or a popular Korean restaurant and, you know, start out that way. Because there's no real, like, starter point. You know, what does that even mean? Does that mean eat it on cheesesteak or eat it on, you know, a piece of bread or whatever? I wouldn't go that way. I would start out strong with all the Korean traditional flavors and then go from there and then dive into trying it out in a fusion dish or et cetera. It's always important to know the root of the real traditions of, and that's where you're going to get the best kimchi anyway. So I would say just go to your, you know, local most popular Korean restaurant and just go for it, because that's the best way you're going to, you know, that's the way it was meant to be eaten. So you should try it out that way first. And I guarantee you will love it. Yeah,
definitely. So Iris, I know you touched on this earlier about kimchi odor.
How do I not piss off my coworkers next time?
Get them to all eat it. I mean, it's a smelly thing. I mean, in college, when I had kimchi in the fridge, all of my roommates would be like, Esther, what is that? You know, and it's just a thing that it's a fermented product. It does have odor and it's, you know, but once you eat it, that odor goes away. I mean, it's similar to, I mean, this is a very bad comparison, but like smoking cigarettes, you hate the odor of secondhand smoke, but when you're smoking it, you don't smell it at all. I mean, that's a very bad comparison, but
everyone.
No, but it's like, you know, me, Linda and I love durian. And to us, it's like, I don't smell anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's delicious, you know?
Yeah, some people get pungent garbage. I'm like, no, that's my favorite fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of very similar to that, where I have tons of people who can't stand the smell of kimchi, but then once they try it, it just like all of a sudden it all went away. So I would say the secret to it is make them try it and love it and the smell will go away.
Yeah, be like a brand ambassador for kimchi, I guess. So what would you say is next for kimchi? What's the future of kimchi gonna look like?
That's interesting. I think when you guys said that Korean food and kimchi has been blowing up, in the States side, it's crazy to see that in my eyes where, you know, I grew up in, with it. I thought it would never be accepted. And now all of a sudden you see it everywhere and chefs are really, really embracing it. And I think that's the first step, which is why with my kimchi brand, I'm not just putting it in Whole Foods or a supermarket. That's not my goal. My goal is to really educate people. How do you educate people? Chefs educate people. That's my target. I'm a chef. I, you know, think it's very important for a chef to educate people on, you know, what to eat and what's good for you and what's delicious, what the trends are, and et cetera. So, you know, my target is that chefs are already embracing kimchi. They are obviously like obsessed with Korean food. And I believe that's a very big part of like the whole Korean food boom in the stateside as well. Not only did food and chefs and all this kind of food culture, you know, got blown up, but you know, these are the exact people who blew up Korean food as well. You know, I think it's very good correlation between like all of that. So
yeah, that's good.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. We're looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. So do you think there is a myth or a misconception about kimchi?
You know, I think still a lot of people are a little bit afraid of it, you know, because of the smell, because it looks funny or, you know, whatever it is.
It's red.
Yeah, it's red. And if you're scared of spicy food, then it's going to be pretty difficult. But, you know, there are also a lot of kimchis that are not spicy. Like if you have like, there's, you know, kimchi first started as not spicy. It actually was not red. It was actually just white.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, red pepper flakes didn't show up in Korea until later. But kimchi was white, and it was spiced more with, like, black pepper and, like, green peppers and things of that element, and, like, garlic and ginger to make it a little bit spicy and more flavorful. But the spicy element of, like, red pepper flakes came later on. So there are a lot of different types of kimchi that are not spicy. And actually, I have that. I serve that at Mukbar as well. We call it white kimchi, just for people who are afraid of spicy food can still have a good taste of kimchi. And to touch up on your question of, what was your question?
I was just if there was a myth or misconception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that myth of like kimchi being like super spicy, and no, not true. There, you can definitely find not spicy kimchi. Like cucumber kimchi isn't as spicy as regular. And actually, like the smell of it too, there's different types of kimchi that maybe won't smell as bad, but it is a fermented product. You have to remember it's always going to have an odor to it.
Yeah, but that's what makes it so good and good for you. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Esther. We learned so much about the different varieties of kimchi and some new things we like never knew about it. We can't wait to visit Mukbar in Brooklyn and support this Kimchify movement with you.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me. It was wonderful to talk about kimchi. It's my favorite thing in the world. I can't live without it, like literally. So I hope to see you at Mukbar very soon.
For sure. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, please support Feast Meets West by leaving us a rating and review on iTunes.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.